Hello, and welcome to this podcast episode from Bethel Church. Today you're in for a real treat, because the ladies of Bethel are putting on a Christmas play that will gladden your heart. The presentation is all about ladies of that area who, for one reason or another, all missed out on seeing that baby in the manger. The title of the play is appropriately named I Missed the Manger. So, stay tuned for a fun time.
Welcome to our presentation of I Missed the Manger. As you will soon see, each of the ladies here in this support group have a story to tell as to why they missed the manger that time so long ago in Bethlehem. As the women talk, examine your own lives to see if you've used any of these excuses to miss out on your own celebration of the baby's birth.
Hello, my name is Hannah, and I miss the manger.
Hi, Hannah.
I know what you must be thinking. How in the world could I, of all people, have missed out on the most important event in history, especially when I knew about it ahead of time? You see, my daughter is Mary. Yes, that Mary. The girl that married Joseph. The girl that became the mother of the Son of God. I missed the manger, and it's due to my own pride. You see, every girl in Israel shows up with the idea that she might be the one that could be chosen by God to become the mother of his son. But soon enough, a boy from the village sends his father to talk with her father, and a marriage is arranged. And the hopes that that particular Jewish girl change to include a home with her new husband as well as her baby, her husband's son, not God's son. I, myself, had hoped to be the one, but deep down, I knew it could never happen to me. Something like that happening is too wonderful for an ordinary girl from Nazareth like me. The scriptures tell the one who would bring the baby into the world, but it couldn't be anyone I know. And as I said, it wouldn't be me. Young Joachim's father approached my father to ask for my hand. A year later, we were married, which meant, of course, that I was out of the running. And then my baby started filling our small house. First, as is hoped in every good Jewish household, a boy for Joachim. Then a second, finally, a girl for me, my Mary. A finer girl never walked this earth. She was the very essence of goodness, and as pretty as she was good. Why, she set the example for all the other girls in Nazareth. When other girls would misbehave, my Mary's behavior would be held up for the inspection of those girls. A person might think that the other girls would have been jealous, that they would despise my Mary, but that wasn't the case. She was quite popular. And if I say so, the boys of Nazareth noticed my Mary too. Ah, there was so much speculation around the well in Nazareth Square between us women, wondering which of the boys would win the hand of my beautiful, sweet Mary. After all, she could have her choice. Any of the sons of the leading families would be fortunate to win her. My head nearly swam with excitement as I contemplated the wedding, the ceremony that would be hers as she would wed to one or another of these young men. Would it be the rabbi's son, or maybe the son of one of the wealthy families? Oh, the possibilities were unlimited in my mind. But alas, that wasn't to be. Mary's heart wasn't set on the rabbi's son, Matthew, and it wasn't set on the son of any of the wealthy families on the south side of town either. Instead, Mary, my Mary, who could have had her pick of any of the young bucks in town, didn't want any of those boys. She wanted the son of a carpenter, Jacob. The young man's name was Joseph. And he was a nice enough young man. But still, this was Mary we're talking about. I wanted something so much finer for her. A fine home, fine clothing, money to buy things in the shops in the town, like she deserved. But no, Mary wanted Joseph, a young man who had nothing, nothing at all, except love for Mary. And he did love her. I still remember when he came to the house to see my Joachim, how nervous he was. Even though his father had already made the arrangements, he trembled so. I was almost afraid for him to sit on one of our chairs, even though I knew that if he broke it, he could mend it. As good as a new one, Joseph was a very good carpenter. As I said, Joseph was so nervous, he could not even look Mary's way, except when her gaze was elsewhere. Oh, I had no doubt of the love Joseph felt for our Mary. That's why Joachim and I were so careful with the two of them. They were never alone together, even after the betrothal. No Jewish girl of good reputation was even allowed to be alone with a young man, not of her family, until she was married to him, good and proper. I guess that's why I was so surprised when Mary brought me the news that all the mothers of the girls fear the most. My Mary expecting a baby. And her just betrothed, the marriage vows not said yet. Scandalous! What would the village gossips say? They always thought I was so haughty, so proud. And I was. I had a lot to be proud of. So when I heard the news, I went and hid from them all. How could I hold my head up in public with the shame of it? We, her father and I, naturally assumed the child was Joseph's. But then a bigger surprise. Mary said it wasn't Joseph's baby, but Yahweh's, blessed be his name. She tried to convince us that this was the promised one, the Messiah. I wanted to believe her. Really, I did. But as I said before, the Messiah wouldn't be sent to someone I knew. And when the time came that Mary and her loving Joseph had to go to Bethlehem to register for Caesar's hated census, I was glad to see them leave, to be gone for a while, so the talk could die down and I could hold my head up again. So, yes, I missed the manger. I missed it because I was so ashamed that my Mary's baby was born too soon and all my neighbors would think I didn't raise my girl to know right from wrong.
Hi, I'm Joanna, and I miss the manger.
Hi, Joanna.
Well, I know Hannah already talked to you. Now, I am not one to talk, but don't believe that story that Hannah tells. I don't believe it, but I'm going to tell you my side of this story. Now, don't get me wrong, Hannah and I are friends. We're really best friends. We've known each other all our lives. We were girls together right here in Nazareth. Our children grew up together. First, our sons grew up together, then our daughters. Now, Nazareth is a small, small town. Everybody knows everybody's business, okay? Well, there are some villages in town where people move away and new people move in, but not here in Nazareth. We're a little town. Nearly all of the 400 people that live here have lived here all their lives. They're just not one to go off. They just stay where they're planted. We aren't the ones to move about, like I said, not us. But, oh yeah, where was I? Okay, wait a minute. Okay, my friend Hannah and her daughter Mary, oh, Mary, okay. Hannah had such hopes for her girl, and to tell you the truth, even though I didn't show it to Hannah, her head was already big enough, okay? She had good reason to be proud of her girl. She was the prettiest girl that ever walked the streets of Nazareth, I'll tell you that. And now my Sarah, she's a sweet girl. Never gave her father and me any trouble, not at all. No one ever called her pretty, not like Hannah's Mary. Like my own family, Hannah's firstborn was a boy. You see, here in Galilee, the best a father could hope for was a lot of sons, because they could work the fields while their father was alive. But he didn't want to have too many sons, so when he died, the inheritance would be spread too thin. And the right number of girls to take care of housework while the father and boys were out in the fields, but you didn't want to have too many girls because you couldn't pay the dowries to get them all married off, okay? And, of course, the families all wanted to get those girls married off because an unmarried daughter could be a drain on a family. But boys, they could earn more and cost you less. That's still true. Sons are really valued in Galilean families. Now, as I said before, I am not one to talk. But when Hannah came to me with her news, and who else would she go to with such news but her best friend, I was nearly speechless, believe it or not. For one thing, I couldn't imagine that Mary would be so foolish to act in such a more immoral manner. Why, if my Mary had told me she was expecting a baby and not married, I'd have fainted right there on the spot. But Hannah, oh no, she tried to make excuses for Mary by saying the baby would be the Messiah. How is that even possible? Everyone knows the Messiah is to be born of a virgin, but surely everyone who knows that virgin isn't anyone we know, especially no virgin in Nazareth. Anyway, I'm not so sure myself that Hannah even believes her own story. Oh, sure, she said some kind of messenger from God appeared to Mary and gave her the news, but I ask you now, have you ever seen an angel bring you some news? Have you? Well, neither have I. I don't believe Hannah for a minute, but I didn't let on. I just let her rattle on and on and on. Well, Hannah may be my friend, but now let's face it. She's finally got her come up against she did. She's a little bit uppity. She always thought she was so high and mighty because Mary was so pretty and so good. And now where does she stand? Her good daughter had a baby on the way before the marriage vows were even said. And Hannah pretended to me that the baby was the Messiah. Wasn't that just to take the heat off of Mary and Joseph, the carpenter's son? Yep, I missed the manger. As I said before, I'm not one to talk, but it was really good that Mary and Joseph had to take that trip to Bethlehem for the census. They weren't even in town when that baby came. It came a little too soon, too, you know. If I was one to gossip, which I'm not, there's a tale I could tell. The Messiah, who in the world can believe such a thing?
Hi there, my name is Rhoda, and I miss the manger. Whew, let me just dry off my hands and take a deep breath. Do you have any idea how busy an innkeeper can be? Even during normal times, my life is busy. Why, I have to cook meals for all the guests, clean their rooms, wash their bedding, clean out the stable even. I keep the animals fed and cleaned. Where all the animals stay, and that work doesn't even include what I have to do for my own family. You see, my husband and I own a business, but yet I still have to take care of them. And if that's not enough work to keep all the other women in the village busy, but during feast days and other special times, There's so much more travel to our town, which means more guests, which means more work for me. It wasn't so very long ago that Caesar, you know, that guy called Augustus, cursed be his name, he called for a census for all the people. That swine wanted a reason to increase our taxes. Again. Sound familiar? And you should know that we Jews do not like to be counted. Not since we got into such trouble when a census was taken during the reign of King David. Regarding that time, God told Moses, when you take a census of the Israelites to count them, each one must pay the Lord a ransom for the life at that time he is counted. Then no plague will come on them when you number them. It was up to God to command a census. And if David counted, he should only do it at God's command, receiving a ransom to atone for the counting. We have been very careful since that time to take no count that was not ordered by Yahweh. May his name be kept holy. But to get back to the census that caused our recent increase in business, this count was ordered while Quirinius was procurator of Judea. This, of course, was not the only counting of the Jews by the Romans. It was merely the first of a series of countings and the raising of our taxes. The way the Romans worked a census, the head of each household, usually the oldest male, had to provide details of the property and who lived on it, including family members, those that he employed, people that lodged there, and the slaves. The name, the age, and the relationship to the head of the household was provided. And as you can determine, the number of people traveling at that time could have been much higher than it actually was. After all, every single person had to travel to the city of his origin. But as it was, the roads were clogged with those traveling to be registered, and the inns throughout the country were filled to overflowing with guests who didn't want to be there. And innkeepers' wives, me, who were worked to death. Oh, here I am, running on. I'm so thankful to be in this support group, somebody that will listen to me. I actually talk too much. Anyway, the time of the census was very busy for us here at the inn. The first of the travelers to Bethlehem filled our inn entirely. We then gave up our own personal space for travelers. You see, my husband, he doesn't turn down a dollar, a denarius, as we call it. After we ran out of rooms, we started charging for latecomers to bed down with the animals. And as I said, my husband's not one to turn down coins. Ah, it was so hard to turn away the travelers. They looked so tired. They had to be traveling for days to reach Bethlehem, the city where King David, the king we Jews hold in highest regard, was born, and the city Augustus, ah, cursed be his name. He decreed David's descendants should be enrolled in this cursed census. But one evening, it was quite late, and one poor couple stopped at our door. The man came to the door. A small room, he asked, was his request, but sadly there was no room available, and I turned away to get back to my workday, one that never ended during that time. But then my husband came to the door and told the couple there was a little space in the stable out back. Remember I told you, my husband likes the denarius. When last I saw them, they were slowly making their way back to the little stable, and it was then that I noticed that the woman, she was very near her time. But just then, a guest came up asking me for more food, and I turned away and got back to my work. Yes, I'm ashamed. I missed the manger that night. What with my work that never ended, even when the day was done.
My name is Miriam, and I miss the manger. Yes, I miss the manger, but you really couldn't blame me. After all, if your husband had told you the cockamamie story my Jacob told me, you wouldn't have believed it either. You see, my Jacob is a shepherd and takes his work very seriously. He does. Most people of Judah look down on shepherds. Some actually believe men become shepherds only because they cannot get another, more important job. But not my Jacob. You see, my Jacob loves his sheep, and he knows them every one. Why, it is said of him that he was once able to call the names of each of his 51 sheep as they entered the sheepfold, and was then able to pick out each one's lambs, which was then restored to its mother. This feat would have been wondrous in the light of day, but my Jacob did this in the darkness of the night. Such knowledge does my Jacob have of his sheep that he can distinguish one lamb from another from their bleats. And oh, the love this man has for his sheep. He is constantly checking them, counting them. It is so very important that not one sheep is allowed to stray away from the flock. For one thing, each is valuable. But it is even more important to Jacob that not one should become injured and helpless or get lost. Silly sheep! They have no sense of direction, you know. So my Jacob has to be constantly on the watch, doing for them what they cannot do for themselves. Why, do you know, those silly sheep would die wanting water before they would drink from a fast-running stream? But my Jacob, he leads them to a place where the water is quiet and still, and they drink their fill. And Jacob knows where the grass is the most tender for his silly charges. Those sheep are very blessed to have him as their shepherd, they are. And the lambs? How many times have I glimpsed Jacob out on the hills, his sheep blending with those of other shepherds, and him carrying a lamb on his shoulders? We've been married only a short time, Jacob and I, and have no children of our own. But I know that he will make a very loving father one day when Yahweh blesses this household with a child. But as much as I love my Jacob, I cannot bring myself to believe the story he told me. It seems that one night, a night when he and the other shepherds were out on the hills with their sheep, something happened that affected all the men. Jacob says they saw something. At first, the men couldn't tell what the vision was. The only conclusion they came up with was that it was a messenger of Yahweh's. May his name be blessed. An angel, because the apparition spoke to the men. The men couldn't speak back naturally, because they were standing there open-mouthed. And wouldn't you be too if some being made of light suddenly appeared up in the night sky and spoke to you? I naturally asked Jacob what was said to the men, and he told me that this angel told the men that a baby had been born in Bethlehem. Well, I couldn't help myself. I burst out laughing. How many times each year does a baby get born in Bethlehem, I ask you? It is a common occurrence, is it not? But Jacob took offense at my laughing, and I had to cover my mouth so he could go on. He said the angel told them the baby was special, the Messiah. We Jews have been expecting for so long. and that the men were to hurry to Bethlehem and see for themselves. I asked Jacob how they could possibly pick out that baby from the other babies in the village. But Jacob had an answer for that too. The angel had told the shepherds they would find the baby wrapped in his swaddling clothes and lying in a manger. Now, have you ever heard such a thing? I ask you, would the promised Messiah have to use a lowly manger for a bed when he came to this earth? And him born to be King of Kings. I could stifle my laughter no more. Well, I had to sit down. I was laughing so hard. And my Jacob, his feelings were hurt so badly by my laughter and disbelief that he went out of our little cottage and went back to be with his sheep. It was a long time before Jacob came back to the cottage. He was very upset by my laughter. You see, he and the other shepherds had gone to Bethlehem that night to see for themselves the baby that was using a manger for his bed. And it was just as the angel had said, a baby in a manger. What is this world coming to, I ask you? And my Jacob? He believed. He believed that the baby really was the Messiah. Not me. I could never believe that Yahweh, the creator of this whole world, bless his holy name, would let his son be born in a smelly stable, nor would he let his son sleep in a lowly manger. After that, things were different for Jacob and myself. He wanted so badly to talk of his experience out there on the hillside that night and laid alone in the stable. And me, I wanted no part of it. There is no way I could believe that God would send Israel a deliverer and then let him be born in a stable. So yes, I missed the manger for whatever that's worth. I became like one of Jacob's lost sheep. I didn't intend to leave the flock that was made of the other shepherds and their families, the ones that believed what God's messenger told them that night. I just kind of drifted away, as a sheep does while looking for greener pastures. I just don't think Yahweh, bless his holy name, would allow his son, his Messiah, to be like one of us.
Greetings. My name is Hasina, and I came to say I miss the manger. Okay, as you can see from my dress, I am not from here. My home is far, far away from here. In fact, travel from my home to Bethlehem takes many weeks, and believe me, that is not easy. You see, my husband is what you call a wise man. One of the men from the East who has spent a lifetime of studying, studying, and studying. He studied the stars and planets. He studied the ancient writings, those of Persia, where we live, those of Arabia, those of India, and even those of Israel. Did you know that the language used in Israel's writing, Aramaic, is also the language used by my own people? And I am willing to wager that you also didn't know that the very art of writing originated in my homeland, the land between the rivers, due in part to men like my husband. My husband, along with men from other lands who, like my husband, had made their studies their life's work, spent much of his nights scanning the dark skies, watching and recording the movement of the stars and planets. I personally don't know about such things, but they know. They know where each star will be next week, next month, and even this time in the year ahead. So other men before them in Babylon, called Akkadians, had learned how the stars move around in the heavens early, nearly 2,500 years ago. Well, with all that knowledge, you can believe their interest when a new star appears that they were not expecting, and that is exactly what happened. Oh, the excitement that was expressed. Caspar, for that is my husband's name, immediately sent messengers to men who study as he does in India, Arabia, Ethiopia, and other nearby lands. And in the next few weeks, strange groups of men made their way to our home in Babylon. They came to view the new star they had all seen and to place it on the charts each of them had by their side, to make their little squiggles on the parchment that they could read, but I could not decipher that at all. They performed their mathematics and something called physics and talked to each other endlessly about the meaning behind the appearance of this star. Let me tell you, my house was truly international at that time. They came by every conveyance you could imagine, and some you could never dream of. There were graceful horses from Arabia, slow-moving elephants from India, and beautifully painted carriages from Ethiopia. Our courtyard and stables were filled, and the servants had their work cut out for them, trying to be certain that all the animals were well-fed and well-cared for. And of course, the servants in the house had the care and feeding of the men who came with those animals. There were some strange requests for food, too. You can be certain of that. It was all the servants could do to keep the household running the way Caspar liked it. For several days, these men met. They pored over their charts and scrolls and talked and argued, and finally, they made plans. Three of the men, my Caspar, from our home in Persia, Melchior and Balthasar from Arabia, were picked to follow that star. Oh, but don't think they went alone. No. There were assistants who went with them and servants and just a lot of people. It was a large group that set out early one morning. The astronomers alone probably had at least 12, and each one of them had their own servant. They set out on camels because of the desert region they traveled beside and had to take several pack animals to transport their foods and water and their lodging. For as you can suspect, there were few inns along the road that leads down to Jerusalem. For that is where the star led them. That is where the ancient manuscript said a ruler would be born. I can just sense some of the questions you might have, like, why was it so important for Caspar and the others to follow that star? Mostly, you see, the reason comes from some ancient writings of the Jews. Many hundreds of years before this, one of our own countrymen, a man named Balaam, was asked to journey to Israel to place a curse on the enemy of a king named Balak. Can you believe in the course of that trip, Balaam's own donkey spoke to my countryman face to face as if it were? I'd like to see my Caspar's face if one of those camels had spoken to him, wouldn't you? Anyway, while Balaam was in Israel during that time, he gave an oracle that is recorded in the Jewish Torah. Here is the part that has to do with the star. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. A star will come out of Jacob, the very one Caspar and the others glimpsed in the night sky. A scepter will rise out of Israel. That would mean a king. Now you can see why the men felt it so important to go for themselves to see this king. A king so important that the heavens created a new star to announce him. So the men gathered together what they thought they would need for the journey, food for them, food for the animals, changes of clothing, and of course they took their charts with them. But it wasn't until I mentioned that they decided to take gifts. In the end, they came up with three gifts often given to a king. Gold, the symbol for a king, frankincense, the symbol for a priest, and myrrh, a fragrance incense also used for burials. The servants packed those valuables with the rest of the goods and off they went. It was sad in a way for me that day. I would have loved to have gone on the journey to see the new king, but women did not do such things in those days. Women were to stay home and keep the household running while men went off on their business trips together. One day they would return and tell tales of their travels, or not, and all we women would know is what the man deigned to tell us. When Caspar returned, he had quite a tale to tell. It seems their caravan journeyed until they reached the king's palace in Jerusalem. As you might imagine, their sudden appearance at the king's gate caused quite a sensation, especially for a king such as Herod, who would brook no threat to his throne. Herod even tried to trick Caspar and the other men into returning to tell him where they found the baby, as if Caspar couldn't see right through that ploy. We had quite a laugh at that one, we did. After Jerusalem, though, they were led to a tiny house in a small village of Bethlehem. When the men reached the house, only the babe and his mother were there, and they too were certainly surprised at the entourage that completely filled the tiny street in front of their house. How the neighbors gawked at the foreign-looking camels and the strangely dressed men riding them. Caspar and his friends dismounted and knelt before the tiny baby and presented the gifts to their mother. Before they left, they even told the mother what Herod had said in order to warn the little family that evil may be afoot before mounting their camels once again to return home by a different route than the one that led back to King Herod's place. Later, another traveler told Caspar that Herod's fury had led him to send soldiers to kill all the baby boys in the little village in an effort to get rid of the new king, who had fled in advance of the attack. So, I missed the manger, I did. It would have been wonderful to have been there, but such a thing isn't done here. Maybe one day things will change, but not now. Women don't get to travel with their husbands on such important business trips.
And now we have the privilege, the blessing of having Rachel and Riley perform a song for us. Let me put this down here by the speaker so we get the... Unmute number 3. Try it again.
Testing 1, 2,
yes.
3.
Okay.
Child was born to save a world.
Amen. Thank you, ladies. That was truly a blessing. You know, these women all missed the manger when it first occurred. They didn't view the Messiah with their own two eyes and didn't grasp the significance of the baby in the manger. They all had excellent reasons, some of which we may have used ourselves. Shame, because of the way lives were lived. Failure to believe what God said in His Word. Too busy with preparations for the holiday or for company. A lost sheep who drifted away from God or couldn't go along on a spouse's business trip. Now, what about you? Will you offer one of these excuses or another one next year? Or will you set aside the busyness and let the God of the manger fill your heart to overflowing? Thank you, ladies, for being a part of this. I think this was a wonderful message here. Give everybody a round of applause again, please.
I do hope you enjoyed the presentation of I Miss the Manger. In a humorous way, it brings home the events in our lives that can prevent us from truly worshiping that baby in the manger. Please allow the stories told by these ladies to be imprinted on your heart, and know that it is never too late to welcome that baby into your heart and follow him for the rest of your life. And tune in again next time when Pastor Kyle will have a new message for us all.